Guy, your recent article talked about the City of Philadelphia schools. They're building a plan to consolidate, to realign schools. What is the motivation behind that, and is it something that the school district ought to be focusing on at the moment?
Loman, the Philadelphia School District, I remind your listeners that when you talk about the Philadelphia School District relative to the other 499 districts, it's the largest, but that's like saying the Yankees have won more World Series than the Phillies. I mean, they're not in the same stratosphere. The Philadelphia School District is 108,000 children. The second largest is Pittsburgh, which is barely 20,000. So it's an enormous school district. The problem, Loman, for them is that it used to be a city of 2.5 million people. Now it's a city of 1.5 million. And they, unlike the private sector or unlike people in their homes, Philadelphia hasn't really right-sized. So the superintendent set up apparently a blue ribbon commission, and they've unveiled what they're called their master plan for facilities to determine what buildings should be closed, what buildings should be consolidated, and where they may need to build new buildings. And part of the consolidation is where they may even do schools within schools. And some of the issues they cite are that some of the buildings are 100 years old, but that many of them don't have heat. There's asbestos issues, there's lead in the water, they don't have proper heat or they don't have air conditioning. And it raises a lot of issues, not the least of which is that taxpayers, the folks listening to this, bear in mind that 62 cents of every dollar they spend in Philadelphia comes from state or federal money. So your audience, the folks listening, are the ones paying for the Philadelphia School District. 62 cents of every dollar comes from outside of the city of Philadelphia. So we all do have a vested interest aside from the lives of those 108,000 children. But they were given $2 billion in so-called COVID money to take care of health and welfare. And in Philadelphia, they neither used it to help students catch up for the ones who are falling behind, and they didn't really use it to do the things we're talking about today in 2026, namely health-related, getting the lead, getting new pipes so there's not lead in the water, making sure the heat worked, making sure the ventilation systems worked, make sure that there was proper air conditioning and ventilation. So now we are, you know, 5-6 years post-COVID, and now they're going to close some of those buildings, apparently in an attempt to save money. Again, in a district, I would point out, where they spend on average $24,000 a child. And I wrote the column because of my frustration that it's a school district where test scores are among the lowest in the state, the safety issues are among the most dangerous in the state, and the superintendent calls together the best and brightest to take care of a problem which has been obvious for years, could have been solved with COVID dollars, and now in 2026 they're going to study it. Probably won't get it fully executed till 2027 or 2028. So the kids aren't learning, the kids aren't safe, and taxpayer money's not being used wisely, and the best and the brightest were assembled not to figure out how to help children read or how to make them safe, but instead to shuffle around buildings. It's an enormous waste of time and an enormous misuse of talent on things that don't really affect the lives of children.
Interesting that you mentioned here, Guy, that the city of Philadelphia has had a population decline. The number of students in the Philadelphia public schools have also declined, yet we're spending hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars more a year on this. Is this also a problem across the Commonwealth where we see declining enrollment, declining student populations, yet the money doesn't ever seem to go down?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, the reality is Pennsylvania, as you and I have discussed, and you've discussed it quite some length on your program, Pennsylvania's had a relatively stagnant population, not just losing our place to states like Florida or Georgia that are growing in population, but in absolute numbers, we sort of stagnate, tick up, tick down a bit. So as a result, our student population has been stagnant or falling. And look, it's an urban problem. It's a Philadelphia problem. It's a Reading problem. But it's also a rural Pennsylvania problem where the economy is not strong. In communities where the economy is not strong, the population stagnant or falling. And as we've discussed, unlike the private sector, unlike in your family, you know, sometimes families downsize when the kids grow up and move out, and mom and dad, they sell their home with three bedrooms and buy a home with one bedroom or two. The Philadelphia School District is sort of the shining, or not shining, but sort of the darkest example of not keeping pace and not downsizing slowly over time. So now they have too many buildings for too many kids and too many buildings and too much disrepair because they haven't kept up. So it is a statewide problem in those communities that are not growing, right? We have listeners in suburban Philadelphia where they're growing, or in the Poconos, or around York where we see population continue to grow. But in communities that are shrinking, all too often the districts don't keep up by consolidating or getting rid of buildings they don't need, and instead they pour good money after bad, keeping buildings that are 50, 60, 80, 100 or more years, try to keep them operational. As I said today, in Philadelphia, your listeners and you and me, we're spending money to remove asbestos and get lead out of water and fix heating and air duct systems that are, in many cases, older than me, where there's been missed opportunities. So on the one hand, you say, well, gosh, I'm glad they're getting their act together. But the downside is they're still going to have way too many buildings. And as I point out in my column, they're opposing charter schools in the very district, and they pay lobbyists millions of dollars. Bear in mind, again, all of us listening pay 62 cents of every dollar. They spend millions of dollars to block new charter schools, and they spend millions of dollars on lobbyists to block school choice. To which I say, if you really want to consolidate buildings and you really want to have less buildings, then there are probably 20 to 30,000 children whose parents would like them to be somewhere else, in a charter school, a parochial school, or a private school, that if they were given the resources, they could leave. And then Philadelphia could really have a consolidation plan. So this is a statewide problem. It's just that Philadelphia is the most glaring example.
It is utterly amazing that in 2026 here, Guy, you could have school buildings that have asbestos and lead in pipes. Certainly no excuse for that being the case. Also, no excuse here, Guy, for the fact that you have, and you can maybe touch on this briefly, you have underperforming schools to a huge degree in the city of Philadelphia. Students are not being educated, yet they're fighting, as you mentioned, tooth and nail to prevent charter schools or giving students and their parents school choice. Is there any movement at all, or any way to sort of force the issue, even from the statewide level, to start giving parents and students those options so their students aren't trapped only in underperforming schools academically, but are in an unhealthy and sometimes even violent environment?
You make an excellent point. You summarize so many good ideas. But as I wrote in my column, I would ask your listeners to sort of suspend belief for a moment and imagine that you're the parent in Philadelphia of a 10-year-old young man. And your child is 10, so in fourth or fifth grade. And I can tell you this, the proficiency rates in Philadelphia on average are 30% for math and 25% for reading. 75% of the schools have been determined by the U.S. Department of Education as being dangerous. So we go back to our hypothetical. You're the parent of a 10-year-old boy. There is a very large chance, very high percentage, that your son goes to a school where almost no one does grade-level reading and math. There's a 75% chance that the U.S. Department of Education categorizes your son's school as violent. Now, to make matters worse, Philadelphia does not allow new charter schools to open, and Philadelphia spends money on lobbyists to lobby against school choice. If you're a middle-class, working-class family, if you're someone living in Philly and you maybe make $50,000 a year, $55,000 a year, you can't afford to move, you can't afford tuition, and your son is locked out of charter schools because there's a waiting list of 20,000. There's a waiting list of 20,000. The waiting list for charter schools in Philadelphia, the waiting list of children to get to a charter school is larger than the Pittsburgh School District. That's how many parents know they want to be somewhere else. So think about a district where as a parent, you're sending your kid off, he's not learning to read, he's not learning to do math, there's a 75% chance the school is violent. And by the way, as tie this all up, there's a good chance he's in a building where either you're not supposed to drink from the water fountain, or there's poor heating, or there's an asbestos issue, or there's certainly no air conditioning for May and June classes. You don't know whether to scream or cry. And as a taxpayer, we should all be concerned, because again, 62 cents on every dollar comes out of our pockets to run a school district that has way too many buildings, has way too many staff. The children can't read. The children are sometimes in unsafe violent situations and their unsafe, unhealthy buildings. Look, the grown-ups are going to come together and they're going to haggle with city council to determine how many school buildings they should have. And I guess that's great. But I say it's akin to rearranging the chairs on the Titanic. Sure, at the end of the day, we don't want them to have 300 buildings if they should really have 150. But the reality is if the children aren't learning and if parents aren't empowered and if the schools aren't safe, it doesn't really matter because that's the real objective. And the only hope for us is Harrisburg because the school district will not heal itself. To call together the best and brightest to sort of argue over buildings while not acknowledging that the children aren't safe and can't read misses the point. So it's up to Harrisburg. It's up to the legislature and the governor. And I would remind everybody the governor exercises school choice for his children, his wife, and he have sent their daughters to not the local public schools in Abington where they live, which is their right. I just wish they would give that same choice to working families, especially families who have to send their kids to schools where no one learns and the children are unsafe.
Guy Shiraki with the Commonwealth Foundation. You can also read his writings at Broad and Liberty, also Real Clear Pennsylvania. To wrap up here, Guy, give us just a few words about the Commonwealth Foundation, also their website.
Sure, CommonwealthFoundation.com. And Commonwealth Foundation is, you know, sometimes we say a think tank, but it's not just really a think tank. It's an ideas tank. It is a group of men and women who've come together that said, in short, how do we make Pennsylvania better? How do we make it more attractive? How do we recruit and retain businesses? How do we make sure children can go to school, to a school that works? And how do we create jobs and have opportunities so that when our children graduate high school, there's an opportunity to be here when they graduate college? So we come up with a series of policies on everything from how to use Pennsylvania energy up to how do we fix schools, tax policy. And I'm glad to be part of it because Pennsylvania has so much potential and our children deserve an opportunity. And we know the status quo is not working, which is why our population is stagnant. So I'm glad to be part of the Commonwealth Foundation. And I'd welcome anyone to reach out to us if they have a suggestion or an idea or want to help us push our agenda forward.
Guy Shiraki of the Commonwealth Foundation. Guy, thank you for being back with us.
I appreciate it. Thank you.